Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome again to the Squawker Talker. Today we're talking about the big Premier League clubs' transfer news and their pre-season so far, because there's been a lot of pre-season action over the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by Greg Johnson. Greg's here, hello.
Hi Nick, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. Also joining us is Squawker Dave.
Good morning, football fans, or good afternoon, or good evening, football fans. Thank you for coming back to listening to the Squawker Talker.
Dependent on your time zone. Thanks, Dave, for doing another intro on top of mine, which sounded even more professional. It's great. Also joining us is James Bend, digital sports reporter from the Evening Standard. Hello, James.
Morning.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, yeah. Fantastic. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you on again. Let's get straight into it. Let's talk about Manchester United swatting aside Galatasaray in a hot environment. Big headline there, Dave, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic scoring a scissor kick within 4 minutes of his debut. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's something that you saw from last season, that Zlatan has really evolved as a goal scorer. The ball just is going in the back of the net if he's in there, which whatever it is, whatever method, a back heel, a scissor kick, a header, just one of those things where he's just really alive in the penalty area. Wasn't many chances for him in the game, but he took his only one. And I think that if he can replicate that in the Premier League, we'll score a number of goals, you know, up to 20, I'm going to go with.
Who do you think were the most impressive performers for United?
Again, it's every time I watch Marcus Rashford, there's something about him that's so smart. He looks like he's hit the gym. He looks like he's done what Jan Azai did last summer, where he's really just coming alive again. You know, won the penalty for the Rooney goal, did very well in the build-up of the move before. It's sort of he's evolving, and it's really nice to see a young player that came onto the scene and has been criticised for, you know, some people are criticising his chance conversion, which is at 56%, which is crazily high. Obviously, that's going to drop down, but we're seeing a player evolve and get better and better and better. So for me, he's going to be for United next season, he'll be a great weapon off the bench.
I actually think if you look at what happened in the second half when United really kind of came together and played much better, it's when Rooney was moved up top, Rashford came in the middle and Ibra went off. I'm not sure Rooney and Ibrahimovic can play together because they're two kind of static presences. And Mkhitaryan kept wanting to come inside, and the space where he wanted to be was filled up by those two. So I actually think in some ways, let's not talk about the bench, let's talk about Marcus Rashford coming into the hole. Because as Dave rightly said, it's not just about conversion rates. He has so much more to his game than that. He's a very, you know, very mobile, very intelligent young footballer. Someone who scored so many goals with so few chances last season, you might think you want to play him up front. But I actually think behind the hole, running on past Ibrahimovic, that might be the key to get the best out of
sort of a second striker role.
Yeah, the Yari Litmanen of Wivenshaw. Yeah.
James, Rooney in the first half seemed very much, you know, interested in playing in the field, almost defying Mourinho, and was pretty shocking. In the second half, he moved further forward and seemed to do quite well, got a couple of goals. Mourinho's going to have to deal with this Rooney problem sooner or later, isn't it? It's going to be an issue for the start of the season.
There have been a lot of very good managers that have tried to convince Wayne Rooney that he's a striker, and there have been some less good managers trying to convince Wayne Rooney that he's a striker, Steve McLaren and David Moyes. I don't think Rooney will ever quite have the discipline anymore to play as a number nine, and I think kind of United are accepting that. When Pogba arrives, I do think there's questions over whether Rooney starts, despite the fact that he's captain. I mean, you know, I didn't see the game, but I saw a lot of the highlights from Rashford, and he looks exceptional. But you can't have Rashford, Rooney, Ibrahimovic and Martial in one team. Who gives way there? I mean, if Rashford scores goals, can't see him giving way.
Very good point. Focusing more on Liverpool, who have been, you know, putting in some decent performances in pre-season. Greg, they beat AC Milan 2-0. Pretty impressive performance, despite quite a long injury list which is developing over there. Ragnar Klavan's injured, Karius is injured, Joel Matip still not quite fit. Origi looked excellent in that game, so did Firmino. Things coming into place for Jurgen Klopp before the start of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at Liverpool's summer, there's been a bit of upset about them not signing these big, like, landmark, you know, high-calibre players, but you think you look at Jurgen Klopp's sides of the past, that's not what you want. You want players that are going to buy into the system, going to buy into the way of playing. They're going to work hard on and off the ball. And I think in Sadio Mane, I mean, I honestly think he's going to be one of the signs of the season. He fits into what Klopp wants to do so well. He fits into the niche that Liverpool didn't have a player in. And him dovetailing with the guys like Firmino and Coutinho, that's going to be a fantastic relationship. Just not on the injuries. Obviously, last year when Klopp came in, he was doing the double training sessions. Players started to fall by the wayside with horrendous soft tissue injuries, which is always a sign of overtraining. I think we've got to be a bit cautious about trying to draw any parallels between that and now. It seems like a lot of the injuries now have been kind of unlucky injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Karius's hand, I think, was that he smashed it against Lovren or something, didn't he, a few weeks ago? Yeah, I mean, that's
Dejan, made of stern stuff.
You can't legislate for that. That's a shame. So it'd be interesting to see how these kind of setbacks set back Jurgen Klopp. But by the looks of it, I mean, they have got a kind of a bit of a... They've got a rhythm going now in pre-season. Hopefully that will carry them through into the season proper to play some interesting football, because that's what we want Jurgen Klopp to do, isn't it? We want to play interesting, exciting, attacking football.
Heavy metal.
So, exactly.
We want the heavy metal.
Turn up the volume.
Dave, there's a lot of debate going on, at least a squawker, about Wijnaldum, if I can get there in the end, and the role exactly he's going to be played, because it kind of looks like he's sort of a replacement James Milner with more goals. I mean, is Milner was playing left back against AC Milan, is Wijnaldum just basically going to take over that versatile midfield role for Liverpool?
Yeah, I think it is. I think what Wijnaldum could bring to you is that pressing game, and that's what he is a team player. And I think that with whoever Klopp's coming up against, maybe if he wants to negate an attacking fullback, put Georgie out there, or you know, if he wants to play him at number 10 to lead the press through the middle, put him there. I think he's got a lot of versatility, and he does bring goals that James Milner maybe doesn't. I quite like Milner at left back. I think that could be a good move for Liverpool. They've been struggling with a left back. It's more interesting than seeing someone like Moreno there, let's put it that way. Milner can work hard, he can get forward. You know, it's not like he hasn't played on the left-hand side before as well, you know, playing a lot for Manchester City on the left wing. You know, there was a great game against Chelsea a few seasons ago where he was man of the match and he played that position further up the pitch. But if he drops in at left-back, why not? He's so versatile that he could play any role on the pitch. And I think with someone like James Milner, you just need him on the pitch.
I think Milner as well, I mean, you've got to remember Klopp doesn't really play with full-backs. He plays with, like, flying wing-backs as well. He likes his attackers to come narrow. So yes. Milner's going to almost play the same role he did at City in some ways, like an industrious winger. But just on a point on Wijnaldum, I think James McManus, who was on the pod previously last week, made a really good point that they've almost taken out the one goal of Joe Allen and replaced it with at least 10 goals of Wijnaldum. And if there's one thing Liverpool's lacking through the middle, it's goals coming through midfield. So it almost seems like a kind of a like-for-like replacement. It's maybe going to lose a bit of the passing, but they're going to get more actual direct goal threat from midfield with Wijnaldum.
I mean, I have to say there seems to be a lot of excitement about players like Mane and Wijnaldum, but I wonder how much of that is more just an excitement about Klopp that still carries over. Because, you know, let's not forget, Liverpool spent a long time buying good players from mid-table Premier League sides, Lallana, half the Southampton team. And people are quite down on it. But now Wijnaldum, newly relegated, is considered a great buy. I mean, I'd have to say I love him. I thought he put in some excellent games whenever Newcastle were on TV. He did seem like one of those Newcastle TV players. But I'm a bit reluctant to get carried away by these when the assumption is that Liverpool are competing for the top four. Wijnaldum, I don't see getting you there. Same with Mane. They're good, but they're not top four players.
Let's move on to Arsenal. James, you specialise a bit in Arsenal, don't you?
My joy.
They beat Guadalajara last night in the overnight game.
Thriller. A late-night thriller.
A late-night thriller. Oxlade-Chamberlain looking excellent in pre-season again. He keeps doing this.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, a man for all pre-seasons. I distinctly remember a year ago after the Community Shield where he was the best player on the pitch writing, "This is his season to shine." A year before that, it was his season to shine. He looks fit, and I think that's one thing that he didn't look for large chunks of last season, but it's got to the stage with the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain, Gibbs, not Walcott because he never does it in pre-season, Akpom, where you've got to reserve judgment on these players in this Arsenal pre-season. I mean, Arsenal don't lose pre-season games. They always look very impressive in them, but it never really seems to show on that opening day. We were just talking about Liverpool. They've got a really tough task on the opening day of the season it seems increasingly likely Tuba Akpom leading the line. What Arsenal have kind of said is that he's got that chance to win that striking role. Walcott's certainly helping him to win that striking role.
He's been very poor in pre-season so far.
I mean,
I don't know if the microphone quite picked that up, but James Benj just unleashed the biggest sigh ever in the Squawker Talker.
The mind utterly boggles when it comes to Theo Walcott, a player with all of the natural ingredients to be, you know, England's number nine and Arsenal's number nine. And yet, I don't know what's going through his head. I mean, I know that West Ham are interested in him. I think that might be a really good change of scenery for him. He just needs to, for his own development, and you know, I like him as a guy. He seems like a really, you know, passionate, hardworking footballer. He just needs to leave Arsenal and find a club that where the fan base aren't so eager for him to fail.
Staying on Arsenal very quickly, there's Tony Cascarino, of all people, was saying that the Anthony Lacazette to Arsenal transfer is basically done. I mean, it can't be Tony Cascarino is now the font of Arsenal transfer news. That seems unlikely.
Well, we know that Lacazette has been on their list all summer, but quite low down their list. Mm-hmm. Rough estimation now is he's their fourth choice. Vardy gone, Morata 67 million. Higuain, what did that get to in the end? £70 million. So now they kind of have ended up in a situation where it's effectively Lacazette or bust, or perhaps even worse than bust. Although I like him as a player, Mauro Icardi, who really would not fit in at Arsenal. Mm. I mean, you know, they've had one bid rejected, £29 million. I think that bid was a little bit further ago than Leon would claim it was. It does make sense that they go back in for him. They need a striker. He's fine. I don't think he'll set the fans alight. But it seems like it's something where Arsenal are keen to make a move now. Well, they know they have to make a move.
Greg, after the Guadalajara game, Wenger was talking about how the transfer market was scary.
We're all scary. We're all scared.
We're all very scared. Yeah. We're all very scared. Yeah, our chief reporter, Greg Stobart's very scared at the moment. And, you know, Vardy had some quotes over the weekend about how easy the decision was to, you know, Arsenal. Is it a case that Wenger's struggling to, you know, basically convince players to join Arsenal anymore? Is that the factor? Is it just he's unwilling? We know he's unwilling to spend, you know, the mega bucks, but this window seems particularly inflated.
I think there's a part of it he's trying to convince himself of what's going on. I think the idea with Higuain especially, I think he was thinking, I'll wait a couple of years, wait for the price on him to absolutely crash when he reaches 30, then I'll get him for cheap.
And the price doubled instead.
Yeah. Clearly hasn't happened. His whole notions and presumptions about how the transfer market works and how player values grow and shrink have just been destroyed by TV money and the super clubs. So I think he's just a bit bewildered. I think he's kind of just wandering around his transfer list, just not quite sure what's going on. And I kind of feel for the guy in a way. You look at Wenger, right? you look at the club he's built at Arsenal. He's built the Emirates as well. He's building up for this brilliant, like, sustainable, well-managed future. And unfortunately, football's just continued to... The bubble just hasn't burst. It kind of, you know, the apocalypse he was waiting for hasn't come to pass. And he's just... Yeah, he's like Mad Max, but everyone's still got floating cars. And he's like, oh, my V8's not really going to do it now, is it? Oh, no, that's flying over me.
A good analogy, Dave. Is Arsene Wenger just waiting for a transfer apocalypse to make his move?
Maybe he is.
The latest rumour is that he's in for Johnny Evans.
I think Johnny Evans would be a good signing for Arsenal. I think Johnny Evans is still a fantastic footballer, but, you know, fell apart under David Moyes and it hasn't really... pushed himself up back to level. Was pretty decent last season for West Brom when he came, and West Brom had a pretty decent defensive record. But I think with players like Lacazette, go early. Why are you waiting to now? What, we're 13 days away from the Premier League start? Yeah, he still doesn't have a striker. For that, for me, it's crazy. Even though if you've got four players, get it done by the first week. Surely clubs can do that. Surely clubs, it's not like kind of like Football Manager where you've got to put your bid in, put your bid out. Surely you could do a bit of business in a single day, like half a day. And I think that's the confusing thing with the number of clubs, especially Man United last season, the season before, is why they weren't doing their business early. Now, it's coming with Mourinho that they have done that and they look a lot better. Similarly with Arsenal, a striker away from probably winning the Premier League. Last season, if they'd signed someone of that calibre, they would have won the Premier League. And it's just a bit of a shame because I always want Arsene Wenger to go out on a high. And I feel if they got Jamie Vardy, could have been that position where they could have done that.
I think Wenger's really struggling to get his head round... The new sums that constitute a risk. I think, you know, for him, 20 million for a risk on Vardy, and that was a risk. That makes sense, but I mean, the 20 million was a bargain. 40 million now is the new punt on a young striker. Mm. That's where he's struggling. I mean, Arsenal actually, to be frank, couldn't afford 70 million for Higuain. I mean, at a push, they could have stretched themselves, but I mean, their transfer budget's only just over 100 million from, you know, kind of what we've reported on the Standard, and they've taken 35 million out of that. I know it feels like a long time ago, but they've spent a lot of money on Granit Xhaka.
Mm.
It's tough, and I really sympathise with him because am I convinced that Alexandre Lacazette is worth, you know, what Chelsea were paying for Hernan Crespo and Andrei Shevchenko more than that 10 years ago? I mean, I'm not, and I can understand why Wenger is, and it's his money. He wants to leave a sustainable club that doesn't have... mid-range talent on hundreds of thousands of pounds a week. I do sympathise with him.
Yeah, there is obviously an issue there. Let's move on to the rest of the other Premier League clubs. Chelsea, decent comeback for them against Real Madrid. Real Madrid got three in the first half. Eden Hazard got a couple in the second half. Hazard's been looking sharp again, Dave. That is huge for Chelsea this season, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's massive. One of the flops of the year last season, we all know that. Was quite impressive for Belgium. Came alive in two of the games. But I think the thing with Conte, it's integrating this new system. At the moment, it does look like the 4-4-2, 4-2-4 hybrid system that he played before his days at Juventus. But I still think a 3-5-2 in the Premier League under Conte would be absolutely perfect. But
he hasn't got enough centre-backs.
That's the only issue. If they'd gone early in the transfer window again and signed some centre-backs, maybe he could have applied that system, because they've just got so many players that fit that. I think Eden Hazard playing off a striker in a 3-5-2 would be perfect. But it's going to be explosive, this Chelsea team. They're going to be aggressive. It's going to be... like the Liverpool-Chelsea game is going to be unbelievable in terms of pressing, in terms of aggression. It probably will make it a poor game, but tactically will be very interesting.
I think what was really clear from the Real Madrid game is that there are a lot of players that won't fit any system that Conte's looking at, be it a 3-5-2, be it a 4-2-4. I don't see where Oscar sits in that.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, I really don't see where he... And it's a dreadful shame, because he's a talented player, but I mean, he's not right for Chelsea. You know, Ivanovic, again, is losing his legs. Yeah. Cahill looks a mess. And I mean, Willian really seems to have dropped off. And I know a lot of Chelsea fans, despite the fact he won their Player of the Year, would say he was free kicks and not that much else. Mm. Now, free kicks and not that much else was good for Chelsea last year, but if they want to win the title, so yeah, there's a lot of players there that I'm looking at and I'm thinking, you're going to struggle to sell them. No one's buying Oscar off you. No one's buying, you know, some of these other 30-year-olds off you, and they're going to cost a lot of money to keep around.
That's a good point. Greg, I mean, apparently the rumour is that Chelsea are looking at Romelu Lukaku, buying him back for £67 million. I could make up a number at this point. People would actually believe it. That's how high the number is. 119 career goals at the age of just 23. Unfairly criticised Romelu Lukaku. Would he be a good addition for Chelsea?
It'd be a good addition, but I'd be mortified, because I've put all my money on fantasy football on a Batshuayi. So
all right,
if Lukaku comes in, that's a busted flush. Let's hope it doesn't happen.
So take yourself out of the equation,
okay,
Greg.
I'll do that. More objective view now. Yeah, I think Lukaku's fantastic. He's just, I think because of his size and his profile as a player, people confuse what he's about. He's not a target man. He's basically like a giant poacher.
And a giant poacher.
He's brilliant at it. Like, I mean, like that goal he scored in the FA Cup against Chelsea, that summed him up perfectly. He showed really great strength to hold off the defenders, but then like his footwork and his kind of run diagonally through the box past three men, and then the finish, it was fantastic. And that's it, the people look at him and think, because of his size, you can throw a ball up and he'll hold it up like Drogba or something like that. That's not his job. He's meant to be the guy who picks up the knockdown or something like that. Even though he looks like he's got the size of a target man, he's not a target man. He's a kind of a thoroughbred finisher. And I'd love to see him go to a large club in Everton. No offense to Evertonians, but I think he deserves to be up there going for league titles and big European prizes.
I think he's the, like, that's a cracking analysis of Lukaku. He's a poacher, but he's as a modern day poacher. You know, back in the day where we had Michael Owen, a lot smaller, agile. Lukaku's like that, but again, he's not a target man. Mm. He's very, very poor when the ball comes to his feet. He makes mistakes. His touch isn't great. Sometimes he plays the wrong pass, and that's where he's got to evolve himself to be that, you know, complete forward. Is to sort of work on the target man aspects of his game, being stronger, winning more flick-ons and so forth. But if Chelsea sign him, they'll have a cracking player with a lot of potential.
I kind of wish if I could see Lukaku go and play under any manager, it'd actually be Jurgen Klopp. Because I think having the kind of, you know, ball thread behind him to run onto, as Dave says, you don't want the ball played to his feet. You almost want him in the kind of that Aubameyang role, like just running at people, having the ball fed to him mid-run. That's the kind of system that would get the best out of Lukaku.
I mean, having said that, I do quite like the idea of Antonio Conte, who's already proving himself to be something of a madman. I quite like the idea of him having a word with Romelu Lukaku every time he comes back off international break. What have you said this time, Romelu? You're not going to Real Madrid for €500 million. Conte would sort that out immediately.
Yeah, definitely.
There's some players that need that kind of Conte management. Let's move on to Spurs. James, Spurs have been missing the big guns, obviously, from international duty, but Lamela's looked excellent in pre-season, though Wanyama's looked really good. The youngsters Winks and Edwards have impressed. The only kind of bum note out of all of this is Vincent Janssen, the new big striker signing, who's supposedly going to take some of the weight off Harry Kane's very broad set-piece taking shoulders.
He's better at free kicks than Harry Kane.
Yeah.
I mean, he got one on target against Atletico Madrid.
He did.
A lot of positives coming out of the Spurs camp. A lot of positives, considering, I mean, I know it's Juventus and Atletico Madrid, but they did lose both games.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Wanyama looked particularly impressive. I think he got a full game under his belt in one of the friendlies, can't remember which. They're kind of all a bit interchangeable in the International Champions Cup.
the big
one. I don't really know what's going on. Charlie Stilettano be knocking down my door for those comments. Yeah, I think there are a lot. You know, there were some good runouts. The squad looks quite a bit deeper than it did last year. Pochettino's saying he doesn't want to go in for another defender, but they do look a bit light for the Champions League. I think what they'll take a lot of positives that they can compete with Juve and Atletico, who are two teams I think they could end up in the same group as in the Champions League group stage. So there's positives to be taken there. It's still pre-season friendlies, though. So.
Good point. That's a good point. Let's talk a bit about City. The good news from a City point of view, Dave, is that it looks like they're going to imminently complete. They might have done by the time this pod goes out. It might be while we're in this room, the deal's been completed.
Breaking news.
For the very exciting youngster, Leroy Sané, who Pep Guardiola previously said that Germany was lucky to have a player such as Leroy Sané. It looks like they're going to sign him. What a huge talent to have in the Premier League. Only 20 years old, 4 Germany caps, despite the fact that they've got a conveyor belt of talent up there. A very exciting signing, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very exciting signing. He's a signing that will give City a lot of directness, very, very good on the ball, technically very, very gifted. Was directly involved in, I think it was around 8 or 9 goals last season, which is pretty decent for a player of that age. I think that's, if you take in the sample of players of that age, that's, I think it was ranked 2nd of players under 20 in Europe. But again, a player that will unlock defences, and for Pep Guardiola, he needs players that are direct and can dribble. It's quite interesting though, you see some of the signings that City are making, and do you not think that Kevin De Bruyne, Bayern Munich were really interested in Kevin De Bruyne. What's Pep thinking long term? I don't want to go for Kevin De Bruyne so I can have it at Manchester City. I don't want to go for Sané so I can have it at Manchester City.
That's not a bad point. Greg, Sané, Sterling, Nolito, De Bruyne, Gundogan, Yaya Toure, City have an exceptional amount of midfield talent. Why has Pep Guardiola bought Leroy Sané? What is the purpose behind that transfer, in your opinion?
I think credit to Pep Guardiola, every single club he's been to, he's kind of learnt something. He's kind of learnt from his mistakes. And with Bayern, especially in the second season, when Robin and Ribéry were just absolutely destroyed, they couldn't play. They were out on the sidelines for most of the season. His team were toothless. They relied on the kind of ingenuity of these two guys out in the wide to kind of break through this amorphous blob that he created of possession football in the heart of the field. And I mean, you even see it at Barcelona. We had Pedro kind of running the lines and adding that bit of extra stretchiness to the attack. I think Pep Guardiola has realised that he can no longer work with a small squad like he did at Barcelona, because whatever reason, that squad just kept together, stayed fit, and they played legal football together with great chemistry. I think at City, he's basically going to have a spine of De Bruyne and these key players, and then just have a revolving carousel of amazing, wonderful, technically brilliant players like Sané, Sterling, and all the other kind of co-stars that will come in. And I think City will be gunning for every single trophy on every single front, and they've kind of got the depth to do it.
I think one of the impressive things about Pep has been his transfer business. And it's quite similar to that first season at Bayern, which is really well written in Pep Confidential. Mm. Great book, well worth reading. It's just that you aren't hearing about these target a list of targets that City are interested in. It is, we want Sané, we'll get him. We want Gundogan, we'll get him. And then, Bonucci or Stones. And they're doing it. They're just getting it done. It's really impressive how they've got through that. You know, clearly Guardiola has said, I want this player, not I want this type of player. And it's done. They'll be ready for them, hopefully, by the start of the season.
And one thing on Sané is what people are saying, he's quite a raw player and all this kind of thing. I mean, I think that's a good thing. I think Guardiola is a player, is a manager that molds players. And if you give him someone who's basically got all the raw materials there, just waiting to basically... He's got all the hardware, he's just waiting for the right software. And Pep Guardiola is the perfect guy to come in and turn Sané into the kind of player that he should be, rather than a Mario Götze player, who's a bit of a compromise of different managers' ideas and different clubs' kind of systems. I think he'll just refine what Sané's about and just turn him into, as Dave said, a brilliant direct threat for City in the final third.
Dave, it's interesting, but when Guardiola joined, everyone's saying Raheem Sterling is the guy who's going to be rejuvenated under Guardiola after a season with a lot of very unfair criticism, let's face it, and a Euros with a lot of unfair criticism at times. But Sané looks like someone who could arguably take Sterling's role. I mean, do you think Sterling will get less game time now?
You'd say so, yeah. Well, if I was going to pick a front three right now, I'd be Nolito on the left-hand side, Aguero through the middle, and then Sané on the right.
Sané over Sterling for you?
Sané, yeah, definitely, 100%. I think Sterling needs the competition, though. You know, some players, after big moves, they forget what it is to compete for something because they think they've got it all. £50 million, I'm the best young player in world football, blah, 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 blah.
Does Sterling think that, though?
potentially does think that. There is some arrogance about him.
I'm not sure he does at City today. He's worked very hard.
But I feel like this will put his work up even more. If there's someone that's vying for your competition, a similar age, you've got to beat him. You've got to do better. But imagine the pace of Sterling on one side and Sane on the other side. If Nolito is out or Guardiola wants to play with more width, then that's, I think that's why tactically it's so interesting. Again, Guardiola will probably bring a back three. What combination of the front three is he going to play? What's his shape in midfield? All these questions that are yet to be answered and will be answered that's going to make this Premier League season absolutely thrilling.
One thing that with Bayern Munich, especially last season in the Champions League that Pep did, he had players like even like Thiago Alcantara, who is a key player for Bayern. He actually kept them on the bench for options. And I think you might even see that in the Champions League, especially. There was a point, I think it was against Juventus, where he almost had like two wingers on either flank as well. So, I mean, Pep having more than like one player in each position isn't a bad thing, because he likes doing crazy things with his tactics, and he might actually overload a flank with two or three players, and then you'll see those kind of players get their game time.
James, City have looked very competent in pre-season already under Pep, and a lot of the players look quite motivated. Pep's already been doing his trick of going onto the pitch just at the final whistle and berating the youngest player on the park for whatever reason it might be. We're not allowed to know. Only the midfield looked a little bit ponderous. He brought on Yaya Toure in the previous game in the second half, then took him off with about 10 minutes left. He did the same with Wilfred Bony, actually. But in midfield, they look like they're lacking something. Is it just a case of Gundogan coming back?
Yeah, I think Gundogan is clearly been brought in to tie that all together, because, I mean, as you were saying, there's a bit of a mishmash of that midfield. There's a you know, there's a lot of powerful players, you know, or players that are kind of losing their power, like Toure, like Fernandinho, who has been underrated, but almost so he's kind of like a modern Lee Carsley, so underrated that eventually he does become a little bit overrated.
Okay. Fernandinho and Lee Carsley. Wow. I never thought I'd heard that.
If you're listening, Fernandinho, I'm sorry.
Good one, Lee Carsley. Well done, mate.
Yeah, Gundogan really, there'll be a lot of pressure on him from whenever he comes back, and it'll be interesting to see how Guardiola gets around that, you know, immediately, you know, in the opening games, because there's no alternative, as far as I can tell. Fabian Delph's not going to do that job for you.
I think with the difficulty again with Pep is that the main player in his midfield, like at Bayern Munich, is quite injury prone. Gundogan has had terrible injury problems the last few seasons. Thiago Alcantara, whenever he played for Bayern looked so good, like in the Champions League. He was absolutely on fire last season. If he'd stayed fit that year, Bayern would have probably got to the final, but they didn't. And again, it's that Pep thing of potentially, again, he might need another central midfielder that can play that Gundogan, Thiago Alcantara role, Iniesta role, if you want to call it that way.
Especially Mikel since Arteta, bring him in last minute. It's especially true because he looks like he wants to play Fernandinho at centre-back as one of a part of back three, maybe. Let's cover off a bit. There's a few more transfer rumours to consider. One of the ones which caught our eye is West Ham bidding £20 million for Andre Ayew. Great little bit of profit for Swansea, Greg, but is that what, you know, West Ham need? Do they need Andre Ayew, a winger come striker?
I think the West Ham fans would love having another exciting winger who's good with the ball at his feet. Yeah, yeah.
He didn't score that many goals last season, though, did he?
I don't. He's great to watch, though. He's I think Swansea had a bit of a weird season. I think he kind of bookended the season with some really great performances where he was scoring and creating goals. So I think if you get him in the right team, maybe even just use him as an option player coming in and out. I mean, they've now signed Fagouli, they've got Tor as well. I mean, the West Ham way, the fans have got this idea of how they should play. Bilic is bringing in more kind of, you know, nice ball playing wingers. It just seems right to me.
I mean, I'm really not convinced by this AU move, because they've been so clear throughout what they need as a striker. I mean, they've been far too open about that fact. I mean, you know, David Sullivan, not a week goes by on the website where he doesn't say, you know, we're after this striker, we're after this striker. He's basically playing Pokemon Go with strikers. I mean, AU, what they need, Fagouli looked, I mean, in a really, really poor performance against Domžale on Thursday, Fagouli looked excellent. I can't see them thinking this is what they need, and they've got so many other areas to improve. They need a left back desperately now that Cresswell's out for the season. They need a striker that scores goals.
Well, Swansea desperately need strikers. They've sold Gomez. It looks like they're selling AU. I mean, that's what left Marvin Emnes and Joe Barrow. what's his name? What's his first name? Barrow.
Josh, I think.
Josh Barrow.
Yeah. 20 goals in next season.
On a postcard, so not a lot of striker options for Swansea. Anyway.
No, but just to return to West Ham one second. I mean, Ayew can also play through the middle as well. So as much as he's not a striker as we've seen, I mean, I think Sakho isn't really a proper traditional striker. He's quite a kind of he's got a midfielder qualities to him as well. He harries people down. He's quite, you know, tenacious and stuff like that. So maybe West Ham will have to adapt, and they're going to play with like three attacking midfielders rather than two wingers and and two strikers. Maybe we'll see something like that happen with the Hammers.
It does seem like Diafra Sakho is on his way to West Brom. Diafra Sakho plus Tony Pulis, Dave, does seem like a match made in heaven, doesn't it?
It's going to be beautiful. Rondon and Sakho up front. Imagine turning up on a Saturday morning. Who are we playing today, lads? Oh, right, back on the bus. But no, I think he's a perfect Tony Pulis player. As Greg says, he puts a lot of work in, runs the channels well, runs in behind well, and went for a pretty decent spell when he first joined West Ham of putting the ball in the back of the net. So if Pulis can recreate that, Pulis needs goals in his side. Obviously, Berahino potentially maybe on the move. Another very talented player. Maybe they do a swap deal. Berahino for Sakho. Maybe that works out a bit more, plus cash.
Mm. Yeah, Berahino is sort of a sort of forgotten talent at West Brom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't he, James?
Yeah, I mean, I'm confused why you'd swap one troublesome pacey striker for another troublesome pacey striker. I mean, but Berahino just needs a change of scenery. I know that Spurs were interested in him for a very long time. I think they kind of got tired waiting. But there are a lot of clubs in the Premier League that really are after a number nine. And Berahino for 20 million seems like a great deal if you're Swansea, Crystal Palace, even West Ham. Yeah, it sounds like a great deal.
And he's not just a striker either. What I was impressed by Berahino when he first came through, like, it's just like sense of danger on the ball. He could take it like inside or out. He just seemed to be a player that, you know, forgive the cliche, just made things happen. So I think for England as well, it'd be great to see him kind of unleashed somewhere. I mean, especially with a manager less like Pulis, it's going to put the constraints on a young player. It'd be nice to see him go somewhere where he's basically given a platform to do what he does best, lead the line, and just make magic things happen.
Well, thanks very much for all of that. That is the end of the Squawker Talker. Greg Johnson, Squawker Dave, James Bench, thanks very much for joining us. We'll have more Squawker Talker action very, very soon. Please subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, Google the word Squawker basically and do everything that it says on the first three pages. That would be fantastic. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.